Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1230, we present a stunning new story from Life Rattle writer Donna Kakongi. On tonight's show, we feature a story from Donna Kakongi's incredible upcoming collection, How to Talk to Crazy People, Vignettes of 16 Breakdowns. Donna Kakongi was born in 1972 in Kitchener-Waterloo, Canada. Her dad, from Uganda, with a PhD in biology, currently delivers newspapers for the Toronto Star and owns residential properties. Her mom, from St. Vincent and the Grenadines, studied psychology and sociology. Kakongi is the firstborn of three children. Her brother Kevin works as an immigration officer, and her sister Lisa works as a speech pathologist. Kakongi, the aunt of two nieces, grew up and attended university in Toronto. She studied journalism at the undergraduate and graduate levels, and currently studies curriculum, teaching, and learning development at the doctoral level. She loves reading and writing, loves teaching, and loves working in the world of education. Every story in Kakongi's new book imparts a haunting comprehension of what it means to live with bipolar disorder. We watch a vulnerable young woman struggle in a desperate fight for equilibrium. Tonight's featured story, Yari Yari, is a fine example of what you'll find in this great book. Let's listen now as Donna Kakongi reads her story tonight on Life Rattle.
How to Talk to Crazy People by Donna Kakongi. Excerpt, Yari Yari. I've no idea how long I've been walking when I see a light shining from the top of a house on Esplanade Avenue. Ever since I ran away from the dinner table at Mary's 2 days ago, I have been walking the streets of Montreal, not feeling safe anywhere. Over dinner, Mary talked about us taking a vacation in Mexico. I remember her telling me that she would pay for the trip. Working as a journalist for Radio Canada, she makes a lot more money than I do. She also does erotic massage. I'm sure her job is more fun than mine, too. I curse Mary for not letting me stay over at her place. I cannot go home. My janitor is harassing me and my father is looking for me, wanting to kill me. I think they have already killed my cat. I keep seeing images of my cat everywhere. It frightens me. It's late, but I keep walking, fast, afraid that something will happen out here, but even more fearful of going home. When I left Mary's, I took a bus to the end of the line, where the female driver screamed at me to get off. Scared, I took a cab to the corner of Avenue de Montréal and Avenue du Parc, looking for Kim's house, sure that I could find safety there with him. I know Kim from work. We've dated once or twice. I wandered the whole evening trying to find Kim's place. I'm convinced that my father has put some spell on me through the Haitians in Montreal. There is no doubt he is messing up my mind. Just as I came close to finding Kim's safe house and his safe arms, my father and his evil kind changed the streets of Montreal to look like my hometown Toronto, and I had to start again. Another taxi driver helped me get back to the corner of Montréal and Du Parc. When I realized that he was black, Haitian, I leapt from the back seat and threw pennies at him in the busy intersection instead of paying. Then I walked my way back to Mary's house. That walk seemed like a jaunt to the corner store compared to all the walking I've done since. I seemed to reach Mary's in minutes. I rang the bell. I needed to go to the bathroom. No one answered, but I knew she was there. I pissed on her walkway. I was so pissed with Mary. I walk along Esplanade Avenue, drawn by that light at the top of the house. I feel filthy. I've been walking like the killer in the Spike Lee movie Summer of Sam. My thighs are soaked with urine and chafed. I've worn these same clothes for 2 days. I really need a shower. I walk towards the house. This must be my safe house. From the street, I can hear music and many voices. I have no idea what time it is. Although I wear a watch, I don't look. I'm afraid to know the time. I climb the steps and follow the party sounds up to an apartment at the very top. I ring the doorbell. A light flickers and someone opens the door for me. Music and strange sounds fill my senses. I take a quick look around, locate, then head for the bathroom. I spy a big old-fashioned tub. I want to draw a bath. Thankful, I have found a safe place to be. I take off all my clothes. I want to scrub away at my dirty skin, but first I need to pee. While I sit on the toilet, I see heads with short hair, men, peek through the open door. They see my clothes tangled around my feet, my toenails uncut, my long brown legs display natural off-black tattoos and darker shades of brown, scars from falls off of bikes, swings and fences. When I was a child, they see that my stomach gently rounds out and leads to my breasts, my neck that my first love told me was long, my face with eyes that I dare not look into in the mirror, and my Grace Jones imitation hairstyle. A curly bush hides my private parts. Someone firmly closes the door. I flush the toilet, step to the bathtub, and turn on the taps. The water flows, and I slip in. I close my eyes and melt into the heat. My thoughts swirl like the water around my thighs. The bath water rises high. It reaches my breasts. I try to turn the water off, but I can't. I step out of the tub, naked. I go to the door and call out to the women I hear on the other side, asking if someone can turn the water off for me. One woman laughs uproariously. I tell her to shut up. She must be crazy to laugh at a time like this. I open the door. Can you turn off the water for me? I ask a woman standing right beside the bathroom door. Quietly, she enters. You should really put your clothes on, she says. Some of the guys saw you naked in here. I nod my head and she leaves. I untangle my clothes from the floor and seal them to my body. My thoughts still swirling, I step out of the bathroom. No one really talks to me. A few people say hello. I know no one here. Feeling very confused and sleepy, I ask someone where the bedroom is. They don't answer. There's so many people in the kitchen that I can't see a thing. It is hard to get through. The hallway has a smattering of people and the bathroom is now empty. I pass a room at the front of the apartment that opens out onto a small balcony, but I can't figure out what it's used for. The living room, bare in the middle, has a stereo in the corner and two couches pushed side by side up against a wall. Near the door I first came through, the floors are hardwood. I sit down on the cream-colored couch beside the dark navy couch. I notice a young white man beside me. He has dark hair, a mustache, and a goatee. He wears a suit and a tie with yellow stripes. He talks with a young man with lighter hair, kind of rotund. We smile at each other. Feeling very safe from the evil spirits of my father, I relax and look around at the other people in the room. A few moments later, I hear a deep voice in my left ear. Are you a friend of the hostess? I look over and see the young man in the suit and tie with yellow stripes who smiled at me earlier. No, I don't know anyone here, I reply. His eyes are blue. I like that. It's very exotic. We chat for a while. Me on the cream-colored couch, him on the dark navy couch. After a while, it seems silly. Why don't you come sit over here, he asks, when the lighter-haired guy leaves to refresh his drink. I get up and move over to sit beside him. When I sit down, he almost immediately takes off his jacket and loosens his tie. I don't like wearing a suit, he says. I came here from work. He tells me about a journalist who interviewed him earlier that day about something for work. He talks about how the journalist asked stupid questions and kept trying to turn the story into what he wanted it to be, rather than what the story really was about. I completely agree with you, I say. I was a journalist myself, and even I have a low opinion of them. He smiles at me and says, "My name is Nicholas, by the way." I rolled the name around in my head. Nicholas is acceptable. I'm Donna. He looks all nervous and keeps loosening his tie until it's finally off. "What does that say on your shirt?" he asks. I'm wearing a t-shirt I received at a writer's conference in New York. It says Yari Yari. I've forgotten the exact meaning. I know it's in an African language and I think it means future, but I'm not sure. "It doesn't matter," I say. "Well," Nicholas unbuttons the highest button on his shirt. "I'm just trying to make conversation and I'm interested in what it means." He needs to repeat himself a few times because I can't hear him over the loud music and voices. "It doesn't matter," I refuse, to give a possibly incorrect translation of Yari Yari. "It's just that," he undoes another button. "I saw you in the bathroom and all these guys were looking at you. I didn't want them to look at you, so I shut the door." "Mm-hmm," I groan, and wonder what else tonight has in store for me. "I'm the one who shut the door." I nod my head and look at him. I've made the right choice to sit beside Nicholas. The right choice is a man who will help keep me sane. Nicholas tells me that he closed the bathroom door because he likes me and finds me attractive. I find Nicholas attractive too, and it's getting too loud at the party to carry on a good conversation. "Do you want to go to a cafe where we can talk?" I suggest. Neither of us really knows anyone at the party and we want to get to know each other, so making a party of two seems to be the right solution. He looks pleasantly surprised. "Sure, we can go to a cafe." Nicholas mulls over the idea for 5 minutes before he finally gets up the courage to put on his jacket and lead me to the door. I enjoy the walk with Nicholas. We both walk increasingly closer to each other. Our hands fidget in our pockets. It's a beautiful late March evening, more worthy of early summer in Montreal than early spring. As we walk, I change the cafe idea to tea at his place. I'm curious about what his place is like, and besides, I need a safe place to stay. I pop my medication and vow to keep taking them for the rest of my life. Nicholas flags a taxi. On the way, he has a driver stop at a dépanneur. He asks me if I want anything. I don't know. I wait in the taxi and Nicholas leaves and comes back like magic. I keep looking at him in the cab to make sure it's him. We have to be very quiet as we climb the steps to his apartment on the top floor of a triplex. It's a beautiful 3.5 in Montreal terms. In Toronto, it would be called a one bedroom, and it would easily cost $1,000 a month in rent. I don't ask, but I'm sure he pays about half that amount. Huge paintings fill the walls, kind of rustic, but showing he has a good eye. Nicholas brings me to the kitchen. "Do you like the table?" "Yes, it's beautiful." "I made it," he says. I look at him with shock. "You're a carpenter? Like Jesus?" Now I know he is a savior. "Actually, I designed it. I picked out the pattern and the style and gave that to the people who did the physical labor." It is a beautiful table. Dark red and golden tiles make the tabletop look almost like stained glass. "You're an artist," I say. Here, he takes my hand and leads me into the living room. It's the first time we've touched and I don't know how I feel about it. "See these paintings on the walls and the photographs? Who do you think did them?" I turn to him and smile. "You." He nods. They look even better now that I know he is the artist. We try to have sex. Nicholas's unprotected penis almost reaches inside my vagina, but it makes me gasp. I tell him I just can't go through with it. As thankful as I am to him for taking me in, he's still a stranger and my fear of unprotected sex has helped me to live without unwanted children so far, although I am a true believer that any child born is meant to be born. Nicholas falls asleep and I roam about. I throw his black magic woman cat outside, thinking she is possessing the apartment. I carefully study every painting and photograph on the wall, absolutely impressed. By the time morning light comes, I'm convinced Nicholas is the man I have been seeking for most of my 27 years. It's Saturday, but he has to go to work for a meeting. I lie in bed while he dresses. I could stay here, I offer. No, I don't think that's a good idea. I'll call you later. I give him my phone numbers at work and at home and my pager. I don't take his number because I'm angry that he would not let me stay in his apartment. By the time we step outside the triplex, after conquering the three flights of stairs, I'm no longer angry and just happy it's daylight and that I can occasionally look into his blue eyes. I've no idea where we are, but it takes about 10 minutes to walk to the subway station. Once we are on the train, we have a light conversation. Nicholas says we should wait 2 years into our relationship and then see if it can go anywhere. He talked last night about other relationships he's had and how his work always got in the way. I told him about having bipolar disorder, and he kept encouraging me to smile. Nicholas gets off at Peel Station. He asks me what I'm doing for the day, as if he expects to see me again soon. I tell him I will go home and try looking for a new apartment. I don't go home. I find shelter instead on the psychiatric ward of the Royal Victoria Hospital for the next 10 days.
That was Donica Conge reading her story, Yari Yari, from her upcoming book, How to Talk to Crazy People, Vignettes of 16 Breakdowns. Visit the Life Rattle website to read more about this book, available November 26th. And for more information about the upcoming book launch celebration, everyone's welcome to attend. This concludes Life Rattle number 1230. My name is Laurie Callis. Donica Conge recorded her story. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more stories.